This is Radio Superior 1945, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from 1945. This is a true story of our past. Step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the Martin and McKenna Show.
Yes, this is the voice from the head of the Great Lakes station, KUWS. Jack McKenna here, reminding you that by saving your cans, you can help pass the ammunition. It's 6 o'clock Central Standard Wartime, Wednesday, January 3rd, 1945. Happy, happy New Year, folks. Lou Martin is standing by with the news. Rapid Ray's in with the sports. The Red Cross lady will be here. She's looking for nurses. Heck, aren't we all? And we've got some new songs from the 1945 hit parade. The 6 o'clock news is brought to you by Firestone. Firestone has the factory method to recap your worn tires for just $7. Happy New Year, Lou.
Happy 1945, Jack, and good listeners. The Nazis are pulling back from the Ardennes Gap, driven back by the U.S. Third Army. We begin our shortwave radio world report from American Expeditionary Forces in Belgium.
Hello, this is Max Jordan in Bastogne, Belgium. It appears the Germans are pulling out of the western half of the Ardennes Bulge at top speed. The mighty Third Army, led by Lieutenant General George S. Patton, crushed the Nazi counterattack on Bastogne. Patton then wheeled northward into the sagging enemy flank along a 15-mile front. But first thing this morning, a dispatch said all contact had been lost with Nazi panzer divisions that had been holding up the Western Front. It appears that Nazi General Karl von Rundstedt is extricating what armor he has left in what witnesses describe as a flaming cauldron after Patton's Third Army attacks. United Press war correspondent Boy Lewis reported the withdrawal, apparently once and for all ending the threat of the Germans crossing the River Meuse. But Lewis also reports that von Rundstedt may be massing his forces in the central Ardennes. This could be preparation for another breakthrough attempt, perhaps north toward Liege and Antwerp, or south against Patton's troops. In Bastogne, this is Max Jordan calling France. Come in, Paris.
This is Paris, France. Alfred M. Schock reporting. The Ardennes breakthrough by Nazi troops caused the Allies to lose all of their bridgeheads into Germany. United Press correspondent Clinton Conger reports that Lieutenant General Alexander Patch's 7th Army had to withdraw along a 55-mile front when the Nazis struck December 16th. This constitutes a significant setback in the Allied effort for victory over Germany. Late field dispatches today indicate that Nazi panzer units are putting up a bitter defense in an arc above Bastogne. Meanwhile, an Allied communique here estimates German casualties from this winter offensive at 60,000 men in just 2 weeks of fighting, with another 20,000 Germans captured and 400 German tanks destroyed. In Paris, this is Alfred M. Schock calling Supreme Allied Headquarters in France.
This is Supreme Headquarters of the Allied Expeditionary Force, James McGlincy calling. Supreme Allied commanders remain adamant about not telling the American public about the bitterest part of the German winter offensive. Schaeff is not releasing casualty reports of Allied soldiers killed, wounded, or captured. The Germans claim that four American divisions, that's more than 10,000 strong each, including the 106th, were wiped out. Berlin also reports that six other Yank divisions were cut up and 30,000 prisoners taken. Even so, Schaeff refuses to lift its news blackout, while Americans at home are told that war production and draft calls will have to be increased. This is to replace losses suffered in this Nazi smash into Belgium and Luxembourg. The lid on the perhaps darkest part of this German offensive was lifted slightly today at a news conference with General Anthony McAuliffe, the defender of Bastogne. He's the general who rejected the Nazi surrender demand with the one-word answer, nuts. General McAuliffe disclosed that one hastily put together unit at Bastogne was called Snafu. That's short for Situation Normal, All Fouled Up. Snafu was composed of battered stragglers of American units. Other hints of massive casualties are from individual stories told by soldiers returning from the front. One told me that only 14 of 43 men survived in his outfit, while another said 35 out of 180 in his platoon came back. With Schaeff in France, this is James McGlincy. Calling the States, come in Washington.
This is the nation's capital, Lyle C. Wilson reporting. The infant 79th Congress began today in a somber mood. Even with victory apparently a long way off on both sides of the world, the 79th Congress must also wrestle with the complex issues of the coming peace. That includes the burden of Mr. Roosevelt's 13th consecutive deficit budget. New members were also sworn in, and old faces ended their terms. Among them, Democratic Congressman Martin Dies of Texas, who headed the House Committee Investigating Communism, and Representative Hamilton Fish, who was defeated for re-election. The Senate's only woman, Democrat Hattie Caraway of Arkansas, lost in the primary to J. William Fulbright. In Washington, this is Lyle C. Wilson reporting.
American land-based planes extended their bombing offensive against Luzon in the Philippines today. Liberators hit Nielsen Airdrome in Manila, while 50 Army Corsairs blew up a Japanese ammunition train. President Roosevelt has asked that work deferments be canceled for able-bodied farm workers 18 to 25 years old. The White House has called upon Selective Service Director Lewis Hershey to draw as much as possible on the largest remaining reservoir of potential fighting men. The man who acted as go-between in the Lindbergh baby kidnapping case is dead. Dr. John F. Condon, known as Jaffsy for his initials, delivered the $50,000 ransom to a man who called himself John in a Bronx cemetery on April the 2nd, 1932. 3 years later, Dr. Condon identified Bruno Richard Hauptmann as John. Hauptmann was convicted and executed. Dr. Condon was 84 years old. KUWS Radio News Time is 6:08. Jack McKenna has these words from Firestone Tires.
Indeedy duty I have, Lou. Only Firestone factory method recapping gives you all these extra values. Guaranteed materials and workmanship. Famous Firestone gear grip tread on any make tire. Factory methods used exclusively. And extra tread depth for greater safety and longer mileage. No ration certificate required either, Lou. We loan you tires while we recap yours. How about that? Just $7 for the whole operation. Ah, yes, indeed. Firestone factory method recapping tires in Superior.
Several more upstate and city men are reported casualties by the War Department today. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson has the toll.
We have varying amounts of information on each serviceman, Lou. An Iron River man is reported wounded in action in Germany. Staff Sergeant Robert Fisher was hurt during fighting in Germany in early December. He received the Purple Heart. His father, George Fisher of Iron River, is away working on a government project in Alaska. An Ulu man is missing in action. Tech Sergeant Edwin Kamarainen was a radio operator on a B-24. His plane failed to return after a mission over Germany on November 26th. His father, Petter Kamarainen, says his son has been awarded the Air Medal just days before his last mission. The First World War II casualty from Poplars reported, Mr. and Mrs. Yalmer Arrow received a telegram from the War Department that their son, Corporal Donald Arrow, was killed in action in France December 6th. Corporal Arrow had been in the Army for 3 years, serving with the 4th Armored Division in the 3rd Army under General Patton. Mrs. Lillian Berkowitz of Superior has been notified her son, Private First Class Erwin Berkowitz, was wounded. Mrs. Sidney Miller of Shell Lake got word today from the War Department her husband, Lieutenant Sidney Miller of the infantry is missing in action during fighting in Germany November 29th. Also wounded is Sergeant William Spafford of Spooner. No other information is available on him, Lou.
Defeated Douglas County District Attorney Thomas Foley will continue as the DA for the time being. County Clerk Stephen Gray says that even though Mr. Foley lost to Andy Borg by 99 votes in November, he will continue on the job. Lieutenant Borg is serving in the South Pacific, and Gray says that he has to return legal forms and an oath to qualify for the office. He has 3 weeks to do that, or Mr. Foley will serve the rest of the two-year term. The mighty icebreaker Mackinac is breaking ice for the convoy to Chicago from Superior. The $10 million brand-new icebreaker Mackinac will plow a trail through the thick Lake Superior ice in a first-ever January trip from here to Lake Michigan. The Mackinac, along with the smaller icebreakers Sendu, Chaparral, and the Woodrush, will make way so that 4 cargo ships built in Superior and Duluth can join the war effort. Globe Shipbuilding President Clarence Scamser says the USS Pemiscot will be the flagship for the convoy. Scamser says that newsmen and women from all the wire services will be on board to cover the story, including Elma Hopkins Kitchell, Superior native and an NBC Blue Network commentator. This just in. United Press has just announced that America's leading fighter ace and northern Wisconsin farm boy, Major Richard Bong, is stateside. We have two late reports, beginning with Lyle Shoemaker in Washington.
This is the nation's capital. Lyle Shoemaker here. America's leading combat pilot is heading home. Army Air Corps ace Richard Bong of Poplar, Wisconsin, is in Washington now, meeting with officials in the War Department. He left here this morning and is expected to be on the family farm in northern Wisconsin in a week or so. Major Bong has 40 enemy kills, more than any other U.S. pilot. This is the first news that Major Bong has left combat duties at Leyte in the Philippine Islands. It is there he pushed his kill total from 32 to 40 Japanese planes. Reporters here queried the major about rumors that he'll be going home to marry his sweetheart, Marjorie Vattendall of Superior, Wisconsin. His only reply, you'll have to ask her. In the nation's capital, this is Lyle Shoemaker. Calling Chicago, come in, Merriman Smith.
This is Chicago. Merriman Smith reporting. It was announced by the War Department today that Major Richard Ira Bong's spectacular combat career is over. In a brief stopover on his way home to the family farm in northern Wisconsin, Major Bong told reporters today that he'll be given a permanent assignment stateside. He also let loose, impending nuptials are in the works. Quoting the major, I would have never planned to get married if I were going back to fight the Japs, unquote. Pressed on the matter, he said he and his bride-to-be, Marjorie Vattendall, also of northern Wisconsin, will be betrothed February 10th in a Superior, Wisconsin church. Major Bong was awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor by General Douglas MacArthur last month and has a total of 25 medals. He shot down his last enemy plane December 17th over the Philippines. Reminded by reporters that the next closest American ace, Major Thomas McGuire, is still fighting in the Pacific, Major Bong only wished him well. Quoting him, Major McGuire is a fine fellow. I served with him. I wish him luck and hope he breaks my record, if he hasn't already. Unquote. Major McGuire has 38 kills. In Chicago, this is Merriman Smith.
We've just been told that February the 10th wedding of Major Bong and Marjorie Vattendall will take place at the Concordia Lutheran Church. The Reverend Paul Bowe will officiate, Jack.
Holy moly, Lou, that's big news. I wonder if we can get tickets.
This is going to be a respectable church wedding and not a circus.
I'm betting it's going to be a circus, Lou. Everyone will be there from all over the place. Thanks, Lou Martin, the newsman who put the nup in nuptials.
Now, that doesn't even make sense.
But you've got to admit, nup sounds funny. Let's check our forecast for this cold Wednesday evening, too. This isn't too funny, though, this cold weather. January 3rd, 1945, the temperatures tonight will drop to 15 to 20 below zero. Tomorrow's high temperature may not even get above zero, folks. Hey, it's January. That's a good excuse to cuddle up with someone special.
Stop looking at me when you say that.
You're not my type, Lou. It's music time, though. Here's the signature song of Tommy Dorsey and his orchestra, and I'm getting sentimental over you on the Martin and McKenna Show by special request from Lewis.
I did not. Thank you.
Tommy Dorsey and his orchestra, and I'm getting sentimental over you. Not you, Lou. On station KUWS. Well, hello anyway. I'm looking forward to the Red Cross lady, guys, when it comes to recruiting nurses. I'm your man.
But when it comes to folding bandages, you're all thumbs.
Oh, I do all right, but my ham hands are not as nimble as some of the ladies' fingers.
I've got some vital news just off the wire.
Seems to me you're hogging the show today, Lou.
The OPA is warning people to go easy on coal and home heating oil this winter. They say that no extra rations will be available this winter, so we have to make do with what we have. They say it may cause hardships for some people in the cold climate like ours.
Boy, that's tough. Slow down the coal stoker and turn down the fuel oil flame.
My guess is that sweaters will be the hot items because of this.
And your pajamas with footies will be back in vogue, too.
I don't have footies on my PJs. Anyway, there's even talk about having a brownout.
Sounds like a milder version of your cooking.
It means that outdoor lighting and unnecessary use of electricity would be turned off. They're even talking about doing that across the whole nation, even here. This fourth war winter looks to be the most difficult, Jack.
Hey, that just means that we have more pajama parties and share the warmth. Yeah. Let's listen to this one from 1939 by Benny Goodman and his orchestra. Here's Bob White on the Martin and McKenna Bundle Up Your Booty Show. Benny Goodman with the singing of Edith Wright and Bob White on station KUWS. Now, that's not Bob White singing. That's Bob White the song.
Gotcha, Jake. Hey, maybe they'll name a song after you someday.
I don't think that'd be too good. Bob White was square. And the other guy who had a song named after him had googly eyes. I don't want anyone poking fun at my feet or something. Now, folks, rapid Ray Paulson. In with the news of the sporting world. Hiya, Ray.
Hiya, Jake. Good evening, fans of the sporting news. Horse racing, sport's biggest industry, is a casualty of the war today. War Mobilization Director James Burns ordered all animal tracks be closed to preserve resources and manpower for the war effort. Track operators hope to reopen in the spring, but will stay closed as long as needed for the war. An extension of the ban to hockey, football, and baseball isn't in the cards yet. Hey, some great New Year's Bowl games, sporting fans. I hope you got a chance to hear them on the radio. The Sugar Bowl in New Orleans was a heart-stopper. It was Duke and Bama going toe-to-toe, with fearless freshman passer Barry Gilmer making precise passes and daring runs to give the favored Duke 11 fits right from the start. That little guy threw 8 passes, all complete, for 142 yards. But the veteran Blue Devils, led by defenseman Tom Davis, hung in there. Final score, Coach Eddie Cameron's Duke Devils 29, Alabama's Crimson Tide 26. By comparison, the Rose Bowl in Pasadena was a real snoozer. The biggest crowd of the New Year's, 91,000 rooters, saw Southern Cal's Trojans whip the Tennessee Volunteers 25-0. But there were other bowls too, fans. Maybe not big crowds, but big games by some great guys overseas. In Florence, Italy, it was the Spaghetti Bowl. What else? Oh, man, 230-pound Negro star Corporal John Moody was the toast of the Fifth Army. 20,000 men and women in the service of Uncle Sam looked on as the 30-year-old Moody scored 2 touchdowns, and he even kicked the extra points. It was the Fifth Army 20, 12th Air Force, nada, in the Spaghetti Bowl. And then there was the Riviera Bowl in Marseille. The Railway Shop Battalion showed the Army All-Stars how to play the game. Led by Eldridge Hintz of Mayville, Wisconsin, the Railroaders railroaded the Army 37-0. This is Rapid Ray Paulson reminding you that everyone loves a good sport. Right, Jake?
Spaghetti Bowl? Hey, I'm getting hungry. Well, on with the music. We've got the Red Cross lady up next to recruit nurses.
I'd like to do my civic duty and stay and help recruit nurses in any way I can.
How patriotic of you, Ray. There's a new one from the Four King Sisters in San Fernando Valley on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Forget my sins. I'll be making new friends. Where the west begins and the sunset ends. Cause I've decided where yours truly should be. And it's the San Fernando Valley for me. I think that I'm safe in stating. She will be waiting. When my lonely journey is done, do, do, and kindly old Reverend Thomas made us a promise. He will make the two of us one. So I'm hitting the trail to the cow country. You can forward my mail. Care of RFD. I'm gonna settle down and never more roam and make the San Fernando Valley my home. Gonna pack my grip and I'm leaving today. I'm taking a trip California way. San Fernando, San Fernando. San Fernando Valley, my
telling me.
In the valley, San Fernando.
Hey, the Four King Sisters, and wow, their new one called San Fernando Valley on station KUWS.
Let me introduce Red Cross Lady Maud Fisk. Good evening, Miss Fisk.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. And ladies?
I'm not a lady.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mac. Oh, by the way, and I'm glad you're not a lady. I meant ladies out there in Radioland. There is an urgent need for more Army and Navy nurses. Casualties in the war have increased, and we're told it won't let up but only get worse as Germany and Japan fight to the end. So, the Red Cross is recruiting more nurses around the country. The Superior District's quota is 4 nurse recruits for immediate induction into the Army and Navy Nurse Corps. 4 is the minimum, but we could use more. This district can do it, too. The quota is based on the number of nurses who graduated in the Superior District last year. Interested women are asked to gather tomorrow night at the American Legion Club Rooms in Superior. There, American Red Cross Field Representative Miss Marion Bacchus will give a talk. She will also show a restricted film of nurses in the field in action.
Look, Maud, we'd like to volunteer to help tomorrow night.
We want to do our part.
Yeah, and we also want to see that restricted film of nurses.
Oh, how unselfish of you three boys. And I always like to see Mac. How's my favorite bandage wrapper, Mac?
Yeah, who are you talking to? I know I'm not Mac, and Ray is Rapid Ray, and Jack isn't a good bandage wrapper.
Oh, Mr. Martin, you don't know the hidden talents of Mac.
Maud calls me Mac.
So Mac is pretty good at making surgical dressings?
Oh, it's amazing how he shows up like clockwork to wrap dressings.
You're talking about our Mac? Mac McKenna?
Natch, I can be selfless, you know.
Oh, I'd go so far as to say you're gallant.
Altruistic, perhaps?
Oh, a regular noble guy, our Jake.
Hey, friends. Here's a brand new number that I know is going to be big on the 1945 hit parade. It's Les Brown and his Band of Renown with the songstress Doris Day and Sentimental Journey on the Mac and Lou radio show.
Each dime I could afford, like a child in wild anticipation, long to hear that all aboard. Seven, that's the time we leave at seven. takes me back. Never thought my heart could be so yearning. Why did I decide to roam? Gotta take that sentimental journey. Sentimental journey home. Sentimental journey.
Les Brown and his band of renown with a vocal by Doris Day. And Sentimental Journey on Station KUWS.
Since when have you been giving time to something you used to say is tedious and boring, like wrapping surgical bandages?
Oh, but he's a prince about it.
Something's up.
You think I've always got to have an ulterior motive, Lou? I love my country as much as the next guy. I want to support our boys overseas, too.
Well, I know that, but still you hate folding bandages.
Wait a second. Say, Maude, who folds the bandages with Jake?
It sure is strange that Mac has so many different names.
In some circles, they call it aliases.
Well, let's see now. The Women's Christian Temperance Union come Mondays. On Tuesday, it's the Little Homemakers Club. Wednesdays, it's the Red Hatters Club. Oh, those ladies sure do like to gab. Then, let's see, there's Thursday nights. Well, that's the night Jack always shows up, right after work.
What group of gals does the rapping that night?
Oh, that would be the Student Nurses Club from Superior State Teachers College.
Well, I see we're just about out of time, friends. Stay tuned for The Shadow, Inner Sanctum, and Fibber McGee and Molly coming up with their closet. We'll be back same time, same place on your radio dial, the good Lord willing.
Student Nurses Club.
I knew something was up.
It was Ray who wanted to watch the restricted movie. For Lou Martin and Rapid Ray, this is Jack McKenna wishing you a blessed 1945.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1945, an original weekly production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Other performances by Duke Skorich, John Munson, Joey Laporte. All events reported on Radio Superior 1945 are actual accounts from the editions of the Superior Evening Telegram. Join us next week for more Radio Superior. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.
Just a final note, folks, about Alma Hopkins Kitchell. We've mentioned her in several episodes of Radio Superior as the Superior native with a national radio program on the NBC Blue Network.
Alma Hopkins Kitchell was a pioneer among women in radio and television. Born Alma Irene Hopkins in Superior in 1893, she moved to New York in 1912, studied music there, and was involved in experimental radio broadcasting in 1917.
She joined the NBC Opera Company in 1926 and hosted her own show popular with women called Let's Talk It Over in 1938. She later emceed one of the first commercial television series in the Kelvinator Kitchen in the late 1940s. She left public life in 1949.
Alma Hopkins Kitchell passed away in Sarasota, Florida in 1996 at the age of 103. We're proud to mention her on our show.